Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Well, welcome, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us today. Pleasure to have you with us. We interview advisors, authors, and thought leaders so that you can become well-planned. And to date, we've interviewed over 750 advisors, authors, and thought leaders. And you can find all of their content archived and indexed at exitcoachradio.com. Just click on the audio library, and you can search by 12 different topics or by different groups or even search by name of the guest if you are looking up someone that you know. You'll find a tremendous amount of information there. Hope you'll go there, exitcoachradio.com and the audio library. My guest today is Mike Burley, and Mike is the president of Peak Capital Management. He's been with us before, and we talked about the subject of people that are counting on their inheritances as their retirement plan. But we're going to talk about it in a little different way today. And so it's a pleasure to have you back, Mike. Thanks so much for joining us again. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning, Bill.
Mike, good morning to you. You're in Florida, right?
Yes.
You're in Florida. What area of Florida are you in?
We're in Jensen Beach. It's about an hour north of Palm Beach, Florida, on the East Coast, on the Atlantic.
Beautiful area, beautiful area. And, Mike, you've been working with families and individuals for many, many years. Tell us a little bit about you and your background and your company, Peak Capital Management.
Well, Peak Capital Management is a registered investment advisor. We're a fee-based planning. And I've been in the financial services industry for 25 years. Our niche, if you will, our market is working with people 50 and up who are getting near or already in retirement. And we specialize in the universe of income-generating strategies, if you will, to help folks make that transition from their working years into retirement and also to be able to pass those assets to their, you know, children, church, or charity, whatever the case may be.
Okay. And, you know, so many people are reaching those milestone birthdays, age 50 to 65. They say something like 10,000 a day is what I hear. Is that what you hear?
Right, right. You know, we've got something like 76 million baby boomers, you know, who were born between, I think it was 46 and 64. And that whole demographic now is moving into retirement. I think the oldest baby boomer actually turns 70 next year. So it's kind of hard to believe, but it's a huge demographic moving into retirement. And a lot of these folks, you know, they just don't have the background. You know, they've been in the growth phase of their life for the last 20, 30 years, and now they have to make that transition into retirement and income. So that's the challenge for a lot of these people.
Yeah, it's a big shift. And, of course, you know, you had a couple of headwinds, and that was that up until the last couple of years, the market, just they call it the lost decade, the market didn't perform, and it didn't give them that last doubling they hoped for in a 10-year period. That they say it was a lost decade in the S&P 500. So a lot of people that were looking for that last push for their 401ks or their IRA accounts, their retirement accounts, didn't get it. And now they have the problem of finding income in a low interest rate environment. So it's got to be very challenging for them. What types of challenges are you seeing out there from your clientele?
Well, what we see is, you know, they're just not certain on how to make that transition. You know, there's really only two ways you can make a gain. You know, you can invest in the market or broad-based index, for example, and cross your fingers and hope things work out. Or you can invest for income, and that's more we were looking at things like time frame committed instruments where we can generate interest and dividends. Now you can grow your money organically by reinvesting those, or you can take those interest and dividends and use them to live on. So the challenge for most folks who are getting right near that is how much risk do I want to have at this stage, knowing, you know, with these market cycles we've had a run since the bottom in 2009, At some point, we're going to have, I believe, a pretty good correction, and right at the time they're stepping into retirement, so they have to kind of determine what they're comfortable with from a risk standpoint and kind of sort of make that transition more, I believe, to the fixed income world. The purpose of the money, in my mind, always determines where you put it. So if you need income, you have to invest for income.
Yeah, good point. Very good point. And, of course, the other part of it is that people are living so much longer, and we're in uncharted waters there because we don't know, how long can – we had a guest on the show the other day that said your heart should live 100 years if you take care of it. How do people plan for that long-term income and inflation and spending power? So when you help people look into this, do you help them look at retirement as a long-term event? What's the proper planning timeline to look at for a person's lifetime these days?
Well, today, as you know, it's a great question. People are living longer and longer, and we have to look at when we do planning. We're looking at least if there's a couple, one spouse living to age 95 today, and I don't think that's out of the question. So the risk is longevity risk for these people coming into retirement. It's living too long and having their money potentially run out, and it brings another risk factor such as your health or long-term care. So the longevity risk is something we have to plan for. I feel my job as an advisor is kind of like a good chess player. I'm trying to stay 3-4 moves ahead on the board. So I'm looking at somebody that comes in when they're in their early 60s. What are they going to look like financially at 72, 82, and potentially 92? So we have to implement strategies that'll get them there.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Well, that's great background. Now, I noticed in the information you sent in, you had a bent to talk about maybe inheritances and a new study that's out by HSBC Holdings, the parent company of HSBC Bank, about many people that were surveyed about how they look at their wealth and its their culture, whether they want to pass that on or whether they want to die broke. Tell us what you found out there in that study.
Right. I thought it was very interesting because according to the study, there was about 24% of pre-retirees said they would like to spend all their savings and let their children fend for themselves. And a small percentage, under 10%, wanted to save as much money to pass it to the next generation, which is a total change from the previous generation, the greatest generation. Their goals were to pass as much money as they could to their children. So this is kind of a twist on that. I think some of them are concerned with longevity, what we had just, mentioned. They're more concerned with taking care of themselves. They feel like they've raised their families, they put them through college, they're on their own. But it's still really a small percentage. I think, most of the folks that we meet with, the clients that we meet with, they still want to be able to leave their children in the state if possible, but it is not their primary financial concern. So that's shifted a little bit.
Well, let's talk about the differences there. Number one, in one generation, we've seen some pretty amazing things taken care of, health risks, diagnostics being able to predict and find health issues that might have killed someone a generation ago and now are just take care of it in outpatient surgery, for example. And so longevity really came into play in the last generation. But the other thing that really changed is the inheritance tax, the estate tax, which was much, much lower a generation ago. So tell us a little bit about that history from your perception of the, what happened in the last 20 years between what you could easily pass to the next generation and what you can now, because it was pretty onerous back then, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. There was a lot of attorneys had a lot of work with establishing different types of trusts back then. But without going into too much detail, right now the federal estate tax is $5.43 million. So for most families, that's not going to be an issue.
That's the exemption.
The exemption, correct.
That's what's allowed to be passed without estate taxes on it. 20 years ago,
correct.
What was it, $600,000?
Oh, $600,000. So,
huge difference.
the thing was, look, you know, from a family's perspective, or maybe you were had a small farm or something, look, you've already paid tax on this money. It was like the government coming in and confiscating your assets rather than being able to leave them to your children. So much better today. You can also gift $14,000 a year, your annual gift exclusion. So what we're finding is a lot of retirees now are giving some of their children or grandchildren money up front, maybe to pay for their grandchildren's, put some money aside to pay for their grandchildren's college, that type of thing, where instead of leaving everything till they die, they're being able to enjoy and pass some of these assets to their children while they're living.
The next thing
that comes into play is that, you know, a lot of times the families don't want to talk about they don't want to have the discussion about, you know, probate or inheritances because they don't want to come off as greedy. You know, so right. the children that are in their 30s and 40s aren't really comfortable having that conversation with mom and dad regarding, you know, how much they're going to inherit. So it's kind of walking a fine line there.
That's a difficult and awkward discussion. You know, mom and dad, how much am I going to get when you die?
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Nobody wants that. And so you got these things, but it occurred to me because, you know, the people that have upwards of $15 million still have an estate tax problem. But there's many,
right.
many, many more people that have a couple million dollars. And
right.
and they used to be under attack under the estate a tax system when it was $600,000, because that could have just been a hell of a house in California. But in the ones that with you know, eight-figure wealth still have problems,
right.
still have estate tax problems. So maybe that's behind that study, as people are going, look, you know, the $2 to $5 million estate just doesn't go as far as it used to, and we're going to live a long time. We don't know, so the giving it away early, it might not be a good idea.
Right, right. I agree. And I think that's exactly the demographic. I think you hit the nail on the head there. 2 to 5 million, these are the people that are concerned with, hey, you know, we look good now. It looks like we're going to be okay, but nobody knows what the future holds. So we may need this money in 10, 15 years. So they're more concerned about, you know, preserving that than leaving it as an asset in an inheritance at this point.
Yeah, and you know that brings up another trend that we're seeing, that is that a lot of business owners that are in that smaller range that might have sold their business are now saying, where the heck am I going to reinvest those proceeds and get the kind of income that I get just by owning my business? So they're delaying. They're thinking maybe selling is not the best strategy. Maybe, you know, dying with my boots on is the best strategy. So
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and some of them, you know, have children that are involved in the family business, you know, which can complicate issues. Maybe there's a couple children that are involved in the family business, a couple that aren't. And, you know, the client wants to be fair to his or her four children. So you've got two of them that are going to inherit part of the family business. The other two aren't. So, you know, it becomes challenging because they want to, you know, leave everyone an equal share, if you will. There's also the risk of the children taking over the family business. You know, are they able to run it as good as their parents ran it? You know, so there's a lot of variables that come into play there.
So there's never been a better time to seek out a qualified planner who can help people walk through this patchwork of change that we're really all facing, both as planners and as people that are you know, trying to live through these different planning scenarios. Now, how much talk is there about changing back the estate tax exemption back to the 2009 levels? Is that still an issue, or will you think that might be an issue in a new administration?
I don't think so. I mean, there's always talk, but I don't think it's going to happen. I just don't. Just a gut feeling. I don't know how they could.
It's never a popular move.
No.
And they may be that it was a lot of talk about it, and now the train has left the station, and now they're worried about other, you know, there's a lot of other things that they can still do, right?
That's exactly my take on it, you know. But I don't think you can count on an inheritance to save your retirement if somebody's out there looking and counting on that, I would be putting together another plan at this point. If you're within 5 to 10 years of retirement, you should be planning for it now. Especially
yeah,
if you're, you know, if you're at that 50-year-old point, you're thinking in the next 10, 12 years, I want to pull the plug here. Well, you better start putting a plan together now. I would not count on an inheritance.
And I wonder about the impact for that that generation that would have been receiving that had we not had the medical technologies and the improvements and the longevity improvements in life. You wonder how that upsets the overall balance of wealth moving from one generation to the next. You know, now you've got longer
right.
cycles. So there's a lot to think about in that regard. What is the best way for people to approach estate planning and thinking through all these types of issues as a family? Do you recommend family meetings and discussions about this, or how do they approach these questions?
Well, generally what we do is we'll meet with the client. Generally, this is going to be someone, you know, again, 50-plus years old, and we'll determine kind of sort of what their needs are first, and then if we feel there's a need to bring in the adult children, we do, and we bring them in on the meeting and look at some of these issues. And I feel like I'm kind of in the middle there, but sometimes you need that buffer. Because I'm able to ask questions and propose things that maybe the son or daughter is not comfortable with, or you know, put across some points that the parents want to put across to the adult children that are not comfortable with. So, you know, when necessary, we do bring families in. Yes, I think it's a great idea.
You know, I would guess that most plans out there are surprise plans. And what I mean by that is, the parents did something on their own privately, maybe named a child as a trustee or executor of their estate or their trust or their assets, and they never communicated that because they didn't want to talk about death and dying and all that kind of stuff. And
right.
so when they do pass away, now the child is like, well, wow, thanks a lot. Because I've talked to a lot of people, I'm sure you have too, that were, you know, when their parents passed away, they didn't realize the enormity of the task ahead of them in sorting things out.
Exactly. You know, you can have the best financial plan in the world, but if you don't have an estate plan to back it up, everything can blow up. I'll give you a quick example. I had an attorney in my office this week. He has a disabled adult. His mother passed away and left the disabled adult a certain amount of, you know, paper assets. But the issue is they didn't take the time to set up a trust to inherit those assets. Because as you probably know, if the individual on disability inherits those assets, they can be taken off their disability. And, you know, that's a perfect case where they did half the planning. Well, yeah, they got the assets to the disabled son, and his other brother is, you know, managing it, but they didn't set up a trust for the money to go into. So now everybody's scrambling, trying to, you know, put Humpty Dumpty back together again, so to speak, you know.
That's a shame. You know, and that is the case in a lot of situations where people do what they think is right, but they don't want to spend money on good advisors to make sure that it gets done properly. What are some of the other big mistakes you see? For instance, in beneficiary elections for IRA accounts and annuities and life insurance, what about that type of a situation?
Yeah, well, you always want to name a primary beneficiary and contingent beneficiaries. Sometimes they will be left off. In the event the primary beneficiary is no longer living, you know, some of these documents they haven't looked at in 10, 15 years, where would the money go? Well, then it's going to probate, right? So important to name the beneficiaries. You know, how do you want those assets to pass? And the thing is, all assets can pass differently at death depending on what they're invested in. You know, a bank account could be a POD, pay on death. A brokerage account would have a TOD designation, a transfer on death. Annuities and life insurance pass through beneficiary designations, as do IRAs. So it's kind of a minefield, you know, so you need to get with somebody who knows some back-end planning to make sure you have these beneficiary designations set up correctly on these type of accounts.
Yeah, that's the problem for a lot of people is they go to an attorney and set up their living trust, and then they don't realize that they had to really, they're only halfway done at that point. They, at least, you know, kudos for doing the trust. That takes a lot of work and a lot of thought and a lot of discussion and some money. But the back half of the job is making sure that everything that needs to get funded to that trust gets in there. Everything that needs to eventually get into that trust through designations gets in there. And what's the ruling? How do you look at IRA accounts? Because, you know, I've heard that IRA accounts, you may or may not want to put those in your trust because those could be stretched out if they're named to children.
Right. You know, first of all, there's no perfect strategy, right? But ideally, on an IRA, you want to pass that to a beneficiary, due to the fact that the beneficiary has a life expectancy like you did. So if you were taking distributions and you were at that age out of your IRA, you could name a beneficiary on that account, or two or three, and they could step into your shoes and take distributions like you did now based on their life expectancy. So that's called like a multi-generational or stretch IRA. And the advantage there is not taking that big tax hit up front or taking it out over 5 years. You know, sometimes if it's just net paid to a simple living trust, you know, there could be some tax ramifications there that, you know, you may not want to, you know, put your beneficiaries through, because Uncle Sam might step in for a big piece of the pie.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a matter of maybe deferring or changing the nature of how the taxes are going to be taken from that. We all know IRAs will eventually be taxed. It's the nature of, is it going to be in you know, one big jolt, or is it going to be a lot of small distributions that give the account time, you know, over many, many years? That can make a huge difference. So good advice.
Absolutely.
There. Mike, the other issue is people that have and set up trusts and think about these things like inheritances, and let's say they have a basket full of assets. They have real estate, and they have cash, and they have investment accounts, and they may even have a business in there. And a lot of people say, well, I just want it to go to all of my three children equally. What can you comment a little bit about that situation where they say, you know, I just want everything in the basket to go to the children equally, one third each, and that's that?
Well, you know, in theory, it sounds pretty simple. But in the real world, if you have a lot of different asset classes, you know, you're going to have to get with a good estate planning attorney to put together a strategy to do that. Now, you know, you can have as much control from the grave as you want, but it's also going to cost you quite a bit of money and administrative fees to do that. So depending on the assets you're trying to transfer, some things, you know, you can just pass directly, you know, like bank accounts and brokerage accounts and IRAs. You know, property could be a little more complicated. Businesses can definitely be more complicated. And when you sit down and you just have to take the time with a good estate planning attorney and a good advisor and figure out exactly how you're going to do it and what's the best way to do it from a tax standpoint and also cost, you know, out of administrating this. So there's a lot of things to think about there. Another quick example, I had a client who has four children. He's put one through college, one he loaned money for a business. One he bought a home for, who's lived there for 15 years, hasn't paid any money. You know, so it can get complicated. He wants to make sure everybody is equal, but he's done different things for different children throughout his life. So it's not that simple sometimes. I wouldn't recommend
right.
You try to do it on your own.
Don't. Well, those are the situations where a lot of times you come in and look at it and go, wow, a little bit of advice could have gone a long way here, because the goal in family planning is happy Thanksgivings forever, number one. and
exactly.
remember, if you're listening to this, someday you're going to be remembered for your planning or your lack of planning. So, you know, take the time to get it done right. Mike, how do our listeners best get in touch with you?
The best way to reach us is go to our website. It's www.peakcapital.fixedincomecouncil.com. And I'll give you that one more time. It's www.peakcapital.fixedincomecouncil.com.
Great advice, very clearly put, and I appreciate you coming on and going around the bases with us one time here. I think we covered a lot of ground, but good information for our listeners. And Mike Burley of Peak Capital Management, thanks so much for joining us today.
Okay, thank you, Bill. Enjoyed it.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this, so please stay with us. Does thinking about what will happen to your business if you're gone keep you awake at night? Will you get the price you need from your business to carry you through retirement? The BEI Network of Exit Planning Professionals is the world's leading advisor network with the power to help business owners transition out of business on their own timeline and terms. Ask your most trusted advisor to create a BEI plan for you or visit us at exitplanning.com. That's exitplanning.com.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.